Well, thank you, Coral, I think. I don't know quite what to say after that, whether to defend myself for the next half hour or just let that lie. Welcome. As Coral said, my name's Tim, and whenever I'm just having a chat to a bunch of people, I want to just communicate up front a little bit about myself, because there is so much amazing information out there on strategic thinking, on leadership, and if I'm going on YouTube reading books, I want a reference. I want to understand who's teaching me and whether they've got any weight, whether they've done anything, and then I'll make a decision after that how much I'm going to take on board, how much weight I'll give to what they're saying. So, a bit about me. I'm 42 years old now. I am married 18 years, have two amazing little girls, 9 and 11. And I, out of college, undertook a engineering degree, civil engineering, did a master's of engineering. And then following leaving University of Auckland, I went into some consultancy both here and in the UK. While in the UK, kind of my life course took a massive change, and I started attending a church. It wasn't that big at the time, 400 Bank of the River Thames, and all of a sudden church started to make sense to me. So got involved, just threw myself into it, and the church started growing. Not because I was there, absolutely not, but the church just started growing, and doubling year on year, and man, they were just desperate from anyone who showed any interest to jump on board. So I eventually got asked to become a pastor there. So no formal training. It was all on the job as we were growing, figuring it out as we went. And went on an amazing journey, a course I just could never have imagined. And while there, so I was in London 8 years, the church grew from 400 to about 8,000, and now it's probably more like 20,000, and that's Hillsong London. And during that time, just learnt so much. Eventually, my wife and I felt really called to come back to New Zealand, so arrived here about 7 years ago, and I jumped straight back into my engineering profession and worked for Auckland Transport, which is, again, a big organisation, 1,000-plus employees. And my last role there, I was a traffic operations manager. So I managed a team of about 40 engineers, administrators, and that was an amazing experience. Loved it, met so many cool people. And about 4 years into that, really felt it. It was in a life conference. God kind of tapped me on the shoulder and say, okay, time for you to create some more time for church. You need to go out, start your own consultancy, and give some time to the church. And I was freaking out about that. I loved my job. It was paid really well. But I stepped out and did it. And it was probably to the weekend that I did. On a Friday, I actually unpacked it with my boss. And Pastor Paul, once I'd been back in New Zealand, had asked me a couple of times to jump on board in a more formal capacity. I resisted that a little bit. I really felt like I was meant to be in the engineering field, and hadn't really chatted to him in about a year. And then that Sunday afternoon, he's like, Tim, when are you going to come work for me? And I was like, man, God, you're crazy. Hey, I won't come work for you, but I have made some time. I've got about 2-3 days a week to give to you. And a week later, I was working for him. Quite a persuasive individual. So now, 4 years into working at Life, I sit on the executive team, and so I look after the people departments across Life. So that's kids, youth, young adults, all our regional pastors. I look after also the central campus. So I get an awesome opportunity to influence a number of different areas. So I'm a keen student of leadership, of strategy, and look, I'm really hoping to be able to provide you with some insights into strategic thinking, how we go about things here at Life. Give some time for some questions and answers. So that's me. You can feel free to go to another masterclass now if you don't think I maybe have anything to offer. I won't be offended at all. Last time I said that, Coral actually got up and walked out. Strategic thinking. So when I think of that and define that, there's a couple of cool definitions I want to focus on. And one is that strategic thinking is the planning to bring about a desired future outcome, such as an achievement, goal, solution to a problem. Another cool definition that I think explains it really well is that strategic thinking is the art and science of planning and marshalling resources to their most effective and efficient use. And good leaders need to know how to be strategic thinkers, have to be. And as we grow in leadership responsibility, it becomes more and more important. Because there's a real weight of responsibility, I think, as leaders, to spend people's time, to use people's time well. And I certainly, as someone that has over time managed a number of staff and volunteers, felt the weight of needing to use their time well. So it is something that I really have developed over the years. When it comes to strategic thinking, any of today's great leaders, businessmen, employer to, again, the highest of levels. And when we read our Bible, again, we see example after example of just high-level strategic thinkers and something that is endorsed by God. Jethro, a real famous strategic thinker, Moses' father-in-law. Moses comes out of Egypt leading this massive nation, micromanaging this nation. His father-in-law comes and says, hey, mate, you are crazy, and then introduces a span of care program that is employed in churches to this day and multinational organizations. Joshua, again, as he's going about conquering Canaan, he didn't use a one-strategy approach, just blitz through everything. Again, God, working with God, had strategy after strategy. Nehemiah, rebuilding the walls of Jericho, comes in, assesses the damage, secures resources, assigns leadership responsibilities, and then assigns tasks. David, God-given strategy in finding Goliath's weakness, and then employs strategy again and again as king. Jesus himself, while on earth, very strategic in his miracles, very strategic in those that he developed in his 3 years of ministry. Paul, the Apostle Paul, credited, you know, with really strengthening the early church and very strategic about locations that he would get maximum influence and establish beachheads for ministry in. So overwhelming precedence for strategic thinking. We can't just play what's in front of us day on day. We do that and we are just not going to maximize the effectiveness of what we could be having influence-wise. We can't just go on to autopilot and fight fires, empty our to-do list each day. So I want to give you some keys. I'm a big list man. As I said, I'm an engineer. I like lists. I like bullet points. Early on in my marriage, massive mistake. I actually asked my wife to just speak to me in bullet points. I thought that was going to be way, way easier. Disastrous results. I have actually asked Coral to do the same. Absolutely no chance. So I got 10 bullet points for you from my perspective when it comes to, again, strategic thinking. Now, what I want to encourage you to do is not take notes. Like, I really would encourage you to do that. I'm going to say some stuff which you're already doing, and that just validates it. That's awesome. There's going to be some stuff I throw out there, and you go, you are crazy, that is just wrong. You can leave that, no point in putting it on paper. If each of you just comes away with one thing that you think, hey, that really resonates with me, I need to keep doing, I need to start doing that, or I need to reinitiate that, let that be it. And if after we've been talking for 40 minutes, you can't remember that one thing, then it probably wasn't worth it anyway. So maybe just sit back, listen, take something on board. At the end, hopefully I've got some time for questions, and I might just ask a few people, you know, what their one thing is that they're going to take away. So I got 10, you're looking for one. The first, most important, and maybe you've got this, you probably have this down a lot better than me, is ask for wisdom. create room for the Holy Spirit. Pray. It's huge. Proverbs 19:21 says, many are the plans in a man's heart, but it's the Lord's purpose which prevails. We need to get and set our heart on God's purpose right at the beginning of any strategic thinking or planning. And Proverbs has, again, just verse after verse talking about, you know, God's got this. God's plan is going to prevail. Proverbs 16:3, commit to the Lord whatever you do, and your plans will succeed. Proverbs 16:9, in his heart a man plans his course, but the Lord determines his steps. God expects us to plan, and he set out a number of clear principles for us to do that. And it's only after we seek his heart for that planning that we are going to get the best result. A personal lesson for this is that we can never just tag God onto the end of our plans, seeking his endorsement. This is something I got really wrong early as a 20-year-old. I've never been shy of having vision, big dreams, big thinking. As an early 20-year-old, I was big into rugby. I wanted to be a professional rugby player. I wanted to be an All Black. I was on a trajectory in that direction. I made a number of representative teams. I had coaches which endorsed it. And I went about that. I had a plan of what teams I needed to make, what weight I needed to be, what weights I needed to be pushing, what I needed to be running at speed-wise. And I structured my whole life around that. I did a university degree that would allow me time to, again, get to the right rugby practices and that. That was kind of irrelevant at the time, what I was doing. And on the end of that, said, hey, God, would you bless that? God, would you bless my rugby career? Would you make me the next Michael Jones, Ronnie Clark, amazing, godly rugby players and have that influence? And yet door after door would shut. I wanted to be an engineer working on third world projects for the World Bank. I saw myself driving around Africa in a ute doing dams and bridges and whatever that was going to help people. I again, continue pursuing an engineering degree to, again, see that become a reality. But again, door after door closed. The actual direction my life took and what God had in store for me when I went to London, came back to New Zealand, just totally different from my original plans. Again, because I was tagging God onto the end of what I wanted, my motivation. It was probably my late 20s, early mid-20s. I read this one book that changed everything for me. It was a book by Bruce Wilkinson, real small book, and it was on the prayer of Jabez. And so 1 Chronicles 4:10, there's this one verse. Most of you probably familiar with it, but it's probably my favorite and changed everything. Everything about strategic thinking, planning, future for me. And this verse says, and Jabez called on the God of Israel, saying, oh, that you would bless me indeed and enlarge my territory, that your hand would be upon me and you'd keep me from evil, that I cause no pain. And I love it. All of a sudden, it just made sense. And in Bruce Wilkinson's book, he goes to unpack that and demonstrate how Jabez said, just, Lord, bless me indeed. Nothing wrong with asking for God's blessing. In fact, we should be. But he left it open. He left it open for God to bless him in the best way possible for him. Not bless me with 120 kg bench press. He just left that open. So, I started praying this. I started praying this day on day. The second part of the prayer, and enlarge my territory. And for us, I think that is about seeing the Great Commission outworked. And I want bigger territory. But again, not that I might have bigger territory by being a rugby star playing in front of thousands and thousands to have an influence there. Give me the territory in which you would want me to operate. And that turned out to be something quite different than Eden Park. I tell you though, that would have been so cool. That would have been so cool. I did get to play on Eden Park a couple of times, but not in a jersey colour that I would have liked. Okay, so we need to pray that prayer. We need to let God be at the start of our strategic planning process, not a tag on to the end and seeking his endorsement. Another aspect when it comes to seeking God, engage him continuously. That's a big thing I've learned. As engineers, when we get a problem, when we get a solution, we like to assess it and then right at the start, list out all the variables, all the actions that we need to take. Then we'll set them out, determine a critical path of which action needs to be in which order, and that will in the end dictate the timeline, the costs, the resources that are required to go about executing a strategic plan. And any variation to this watershed process of project management, strategic thinking, is seen as a threat. So any new good idea that comes in part the way through, even though it might make the end result even better, it's a threat because it's going to affect our watershed, our brilliant Gantt chart that sets out how we're to solve this problem. I believe, again, in the church and in anything, we've got to be a lot more agile in our strategic thinking, in our outworking, in our defining solutions. We need to be seeking the Holy Spirit and able to, again, be agile, change direction on a dime, because the Holy Spirit plan, God's plan, is always going to be a million times better than anything we can come up with. So be agile in that and hold things lightly. Don't get too precious. Okay, that was point number one. We're going to start moving faster. Number two, create time. So work on the business, not just in the business. Again, chasing your to-do list, emptying your inbox isn't going to change the world. We've got to prioritize time for strategic thinking. So we've got to schedule specific annual, monthly, weekly time. Have a pen in our hands when we're doing that. Have time with others, schedule retreats, mini retreats. And I'm a big believer in actually staring at a problem. And if we stare at any problem long enough, we're engaging God. I believe we will solve it. And I love some quotes from Einstein on this. He stated, "It's not that I'm so smart, it's just that I stay with problems longer." He also said, "If I had an hour to solve a problem, I'd spend 55 minutes thinking about the problem and 5 minutes thinking about the solutions." The more time one spends understanding the problem, the more effective the resolution. And I love getting on the tools. I love being in the detail. But we've got to step back. And while execution is important, because you know what's said about today's millennials is they love philosophizing about everything, and if they think they've talked about it, they consider it as good as done. We have to execute. We have to execute. But we have to also really protect, step back, and take time to think about things and think about them deeply. Okay, number three, don't be precious about methodology. What worked in one season won't be right for the next. At Life, about 4 or 5 years ago, we started, Pastor Paul came up with a vision that every individual would be known at church. And we set about structuring pastors, bringing on resources, splitting up the city into 11 regions, investing heavily in a significant database that would allow us to track individuals, that would allow us to schedule, create alerts when we were to, again, make contact, phone call people on a 3-monthly basis, and invested a massive amount into ensuring that every individual in church was known. And it was brilliant. It strengthened our regions. We got to know just a whole lot of people in church. But 2 years on, our pastors would be calling the same people maybe the 16th, 20th time, and they were starting to feel like call center offices. They were trying to sell a product to a customer who didn't want them. People were blocking phone calls. People were getting, our pastors were getting quite short, sharp responses. We weren't connecting people into groups. Every now and again, we would get that amazing story where, oh, this is the 16th time you've called me, and man, I'm going to do it this time. I'm going to get in a group. And that was cool, but man, not for the amount of resource we were investing at that time. That strategy, that approach, had a season. So we looked at it critically and then totally flipped everything on its head. We stopped calling people. We invested in developing leaders. Our leadership numbers went from 650 to 950 in about a year and a half, 2 years. We'd been stagnant for a long time. We focused, our pastors focused on creating better products, groups that would then sell themselves. And from stage, we made a commitment to clearly communicate pathways into teams, into connection. And again, we have seen amazing results because of that. And just because we're seeing amazing results now does not mean we are stuck with that forever. We will continue to challenge and not be precious about methodology. Change up how we do new Christians. 20 years of probably doing new Christians a certain way, and we've changed it, and all of a sudden we'll put the onus on individuals to put up their hand and say, hey, I want to get involved. We'll give them the time now to, again, choose when to, again, self-initiate with it when it comes to teams, groups, new Christian courses. We change prayer meetings, service times, jobs, job titles. At Life, Pastor Paul's only commitment is that there will be change. And sometimes he's going to change stuff just because he wants to, or it hasn't changed in enough time. Number four, we've got to gain perspective, not just our version of it. So I want to be big on numbers, dig, be inquisitive. If we can't measure it, you can't improve it. So again, we'll employ surveys, maybe that's parking survey, a survey of kids, a survey of those undertaking our next steps course. Now, we don't bombard people with that and data, but there is appropriate time, and people actually don't mind and like getting feedback in terms of, again, how to improve service that we provide. When it comes to gaining perspective, we've got to balance creativity with realism. We've got to check the angles. Our version of something isn't always the truth, and we can get stuck in a certain paradigm. I was reading a book recently, and it gave this problem, and I quite like maths problems. Some Roman numerals. So XI, 11 plus I, 1 equals X, 10. I'm like, there's no way this makes sense. But if we just flip the paper around 180 degrees, all of a sudden it changes everything. Which side of the paper we're standing on can totally change our perspective. So when thinking, when critically thinking, when employing, again, strategy to advance in areas of responsibility, we've got to check the angles, seek others' perspectives. When gaining perspective, we've got to check the interactions of decisions. Again, with church, changing a service time here affects kids in another location, limits our ability to maybe live link, changes something completely. We had significant advancement in our youth program about 2 to 3 years ago. Our outreach was absolutely unbelievable. We were reaching a whole lot of South Auckland that we previously hadn't been able to engage. We had a couple of individual kids that were just ridiculous when it came to, again, seeing kids brought along to a program. And we were thinking, this is amazing. But man, overnight, our culture changed. It had reached a tipping point where we no longer controlled the culture. We were getting the numbers that we had hoped for, but things were going south. We were having fights in our services, and all of a sudden it imploded. There was, a perverse outcome to something that we'd been really striving for, and we'd seen all the problems. Another classic when it comes to gaining perspective is in church at Life, we would give away welcome packs with free coffees. We want to be a generous church at Life, and I love that. But as a consequence, we would just get, with the welcome packs and the coffees, we're effectively buying people's information and contact details for our pastors then to follow up, call, try and build them into church. And it was been a massive waste of time as our pastors would be chasing people all over the globe that really just wanted the free coffee and were happy to write their name down to get it. Now we just give away coffee cards to all our welcome teams and say, go be generous to whoever you feel like. If people are rocking up new, buy them a coffee and just have a connection card on the back of our seats and make it very clear that if people want to get involved, get on team, get in a group, fill out that card. And we get the same amount of leads, but they're much higher quality leads that actually are at a stage in their development that they want to get connected. So again, we got to check perspectives. Think deeply about things. Another key, number five, when it comes to thinking strategically is think big. Think big. And on the whole, I think Christians, as Christians, it can be one of our largest failings. We don't think big enough. Recently, I've been reading this book, which is a series of interviews from leading cultural experts, business people, art stars. You know, you got gold medalists, billionaires. It was an awesome book, and they just think differently. They really think differently. There was this one guy, Peter Diamandis, and he's been named one of the world's 50 greatest leaders by Fortune magazine. And he states this. He states, "A problem is a terrible thing to waste. I think of problems as gold mines. The world's biggest problems are the world's biggest business opportunities." And then he talks about scale. And when it comes to scale, when you go after a moonshot, something that's 10 times bigger, not just 10% bigger, a number of things happen. When you're going for 10 times bigger, you're out there by yourself. And he gives the example of, again, mining for resources and, again, advancing that. He's not going 10% deeper. He's not going into territories that are 10% harder. He's trying to figure out how to mine asteroids. You know, that's big picture thinking. So the second thing that happens when you're trying to go 10 times bigger, you have to start with a clean sheet of paper and you approach the problem completely differently. You're not just tinkering with something that already works. The third thing is when you go 10 times bigger versus 10% bigger, the rewards are typically 100 times more. They think differently. When it comes to speed, Peter Thiel, another business leader, states, if you've got a 10-year plan of how to get somewhere, you should ask, why can't this be done in 6 months? I love that. I love that. Again, we've seen examples of that in church. I remember sitting in a service, and we've got a vision at our church around community, and there's specific aspects of that. One of those is that by the year 2020, we're giving away 20,000 Christmas boxes. And I remember Pastor Scott on a front row, who's responsible for this, sitting in a service on Vision Sunday. It's all planned out, and then Pastor Paul just throws out there that we're going to achieve this goal like 2 or 3 years early. Scott just about falls off his seat. But sure enough, we're going to do it. Yeah. We're going to nail that, again, because it's stated. Sometimes what comes out of our mouth and our thinking just totally restricts things. Number six, has anyone got a one yet? Okay, I'm going to keep going. No one's got their one thing that they can take away. Okay, that leaves a little bit of pressure on the back end of this session. I gave all my best stuff up front. I haven't seen enough nodding to suggest that everything's been implemented yet for you not to have a one. Okay, another thing that I'm getting challenged on about that recently is being proactive in our thinking. Be proactive. We've got to anticipate change when it comes to strategic thinking. Think about it before it's broken. Another amazing businessman, Hiroshi Mikitani. So he runs Japan's largest e-commerce site. And he's got 12,000 employees. He's grown that right from a startup. And he noticed a pattern when it came to the development of his business. And he calls it the 3-in-10 rule. And this rule states that every time a business and organization triples in size, so when it goes from 3 to 10, you know, his maths isn't too good, or 10 to 30, 30 to 100, 100 to 300, 300 to 1,000, and so on, everything breaks. It is just a fact. And by everything, he means everything, whether it's HR systems, payroll systems, just the way companies would communicate. Every time those growth thresholds were breached, things needed to be totally reinvented, not just tinkered with, they would plain stop working. And if those growth patterns weren't recognized, if they weren't addressed, they were going to cause problems and come back to haunt a company, its development at a later date. And he would state that we need to be perpetually thinking about how to reinvent ourselves, and that needs to happen, again, before something's broken. And we've seen that within our church. 2-3 years ago, we recognized that we needed to really change up how our groups were being looked after. Our group leaders potentially were feeling isolated. Our groups report through to our regional pastors, and at that stage, our regional pastors might be responsible for looking after 10, 15, 20 groups maybe, along with all other aspects of their job, and it was becoming too much. Leaders weren't getting the time they needed to, again, solve problems, be encouraged, be inspired. We would turn over leaders. We wouldn't grow. So, you know, we recognized we needed to put another level of leadership, the Jethro principle. But by that stage, it's too late. once the problem's already identified, that really slowed our momentum. And we've spent the last year and a half trying to establish coaches that would look after 3 to 5 groups each, that would, again, we're training them, we're trying to see them at their most effective. But it's not an overnight fix. We needed to anticipate that and make that change earlier. We've got to be proactive about growth. And that 3 in 10 rule, again, would seem to be in any area of business, not-for-profit organization, a truth. So number 6, be proactive. Number 7, be committed lifelong learners. And I imagine Coral would have touched on this in her session. Being a lifelong learner, we've got to be inquisitive. Read widely, listen, learn, have humility and application. Us at Life, you know, we really would want to consider ourselves a forerunner church, breaking barriers. We want to be leading in a number of areas, providing help to the kingdom. But man, we borrow liberally. I've had the privilege of spending a lot of time in teaching environments with Church of the Highlands. I've been to Alabama to, again, get just all the information we could about how they're doing systems. And we have implemented very closely key systems that they're, again, teaching on and providing an example in. When we want to advance, you know, we don't have to reinvent the wheel. So, again, be committed lifelong learners. Listen. Listening's a massive thing when it comes to being a learner. I've had a number of people, again, try and organise time with me. Maybe, hey, can I get an hour of your time? I want to unpack how life does certain things, maybe looks after groups. And they'll come sit in my office and then spend 90% of that time telling me what they're doing and seeking validation for, again, their processes. And I'll just be sitting there and nodding away, say, that's great. And by the end of it, not have communicated anything. They walk out happy every time. So I'm like, okay, that's sweet. But we've got to listen. And that's something that I try so hard to do. And then when it comes to learning, just learn outside your field. I went to a business startup, a course recently, just because I was interested. Totally separate. It was internet startups, something that didn't relate to my specific areas of interest at all. But man, it was fascinating. I'm convinced at some point that knowledge is going to be useful to hinge some kind of solution or problem solving on top of. Number 8, include others. Proverbs 15:22, plans fail for lack of counsel, but with many advisors they succeed. So we've got to unpack stuff with others. That's helpful with, getting perspective, getting people to push other sides of the argument. And that's something in the past I've potentially struggled with. If someone disagreed with me, I'd be like, what? And, we'd go head to head. I just want people to be on board right from the beginning. But now I love employing a B-team strategy, have people attack an idea. I want to have robust discussion where we see, again, the best idea, the best version of an idea win. I think that helps as you get a bit older. You can become a bit more humble, accept that your perspective, your idea doesn't need to be the winner and be a bit more focused on the reality. But man, as a 30-year-old, quite competitive young man, I did not enjoy that. Get on board or get out. Number 9, write it down. With strategic thinking, strategic planning, gotta get stuff down on paper. I'm a big believer in post-its, whiteboards, brainstorming, mind dumps. Put it on paper. It's the best way to develop ideas and continue to review and improve your thinking. Test ideas, execute them. I'm a big believer in business cases. So any of my team come up with, again, a change of direction that we want to go at church, and I'm going to want them, ask them, they know they need to, put together a business case. Maybe just a one-pager. I want to see cons, pros. I want to see, again, the benefit that we're going to get by making this change. We're not just going to implement something. I want to see that it's been thought about deeply. All the angles have been tested. Potentially, I'm growing a bit slower in, reacting, making decisions. I want to see data that is going to back up a particular change. At Life, we're also huge in strategic planning. We set aside time every year where we review, we go over, we adapt, we change our strategic plans in each of our different department areas. We put together one-page strategic plans, and they really serve to ensure that, again, we're executing Pastor Paul Pastemary's vision in the absolute optimal way possible that we see we can do. And again, God is involved in every aspect of that, but we put a plan down. We seek to stay aligned to that. So write it down. And then number 10, I really hope you got something by now. This is something that I've been challenged on just quite recently, and I love it. And it's out of a book, and it's the Canvas Strategy, and it's serve others with our thinking. Pastor Paul actually has been big on this, but it's not till I started reading a secular author that it kind of twigged and dropped from my head to, I guess, my heart. And there's an author I quite like, Tim Ferriss. Please don't read his books. It's just tag out there. I do not endorse everything that he would write about. But he says this. He says, imagine if for every person you met, you thought of some way to help them, something you could do for them. You'd learn a great deal by solving diverse problems. You'd develop a reputation for being indispensable. And then he goes on and challenges readers to come up with ideas to hand over to your boss. Find what nobody else wants to do and do it. Find inefficiencies and waste and redundancy. Identify leaks and patches to free up resources for new areas. Produce more than everyone else and give away your ideas. I love that. I love that. He says, you know, you become indispensable when you employ this strategy. A lot of us would say, hey, I'm not in a position to actually even think strategically or contribute. I'm not involved in those meetings. I'm not involved there. Man. You know, if our pastors, if our team leaders have an issue, we don't need to be in proximity, or we don't need to be invited to a specific meeting or invited to contribute to a problem. Man, you rock up to them with a business case that's going to change their world. You're going to become invaluable. And we do that in a wide range of areas. Our strategic thinking, our ability to, you know, engage the cognitive process and solving problems advances all the time. So again, and I love that. It's again around the principle of sowing and reaping. Sow ideas. I love it. So that's my 10. And I am sure there's nothing new there. And I hope there's been something that will have reminded you of something you need to reinstate, something you need to start doing, something you need to stop doing. When it comes down to it, strategic thinking is going to change the world. It is going to shape the future. It's just a matter of whose strategy that is. And I really believe it needs to be the church's. We've got to stop just playing what's in front of us, employ strategy, and man, we can change this world. So that's my 10 points. I've got some time for question and answers. I can go into a little bit more detail around our one-page strategic plans. So if people have got some questions now, really happy to answer them. Yes. Straight behind you, Carl.
Oh, straight away.
You talk about create time, and it's today's tendency that time is not available. So I think that prioritizing to make time for strategic thinking is absolutely essential.
Yep, totally agree.
I have two, if that's okay, questions. One question is, what's some of the resources or books that you typically go to when it comes to strategic thinking? Like, do you have a podcast, whether that be like an Andy Stanley or a type of book or an author that is a go-to for you?
I've got a lot out of this a recent book by Tim Ferriss, Tools for Titans. Again, there's some pretty liberal thinking in there as well. But I feel like, again, we can pick and choose what we take out of different books. I love this book, Mastering the Rockefeller Habits. And that's an excellent book around, again, strategic thinking. It sets out very clearly one-page strategic plans. It's a little bit dated now, but again, I'd highly recommend that. And those two would be, again, key ones that I'd suggest.
Cool, thank you. Second question, when it comes to your strategic planning, when do you go from your planning and thinking it out to actually executing that? So when do you get to the point of, okay, we've been in planning for long enough, now let's get this thing running?
I guess that would, you know, again, depend on timelines, depend on how critical a specific problem is to solve. I'm a little bit more flexible, as I said at the start now, in terms of being agile, wanting to ensure that we get the best solution. So I think when you are convinced that your business case stacks up, when maybe you've sat around a table with a B team, you attack it, there is no more optimal opportunity. Having said that, we've got to avoid decision paralysis where, you know, we're going to just get stuck in a place. Sometimes it's better just to make a decision and then just guidance from the Holy Spirit, definitely.
Thank you. Good question.
So the question is what we do for our coaches that look after groups, 3 to 5 groups each. We're really, again, in our infancy there. We have defined a job description. A lot of that is going to be, again, around coaching, around relationship. So it's an ongoing process, but each of them would be in very close relationship. There'd probably be 5 or 6 for each of our regional pastors, and our regional pastors are investing a disproportionate amount of time in them, so it's kind of one-on-one on-the-job training as well. I think there's another question. Yes.
Yeah. So in regard to anticipating change, change management is obviously huge. Do you have any tips in regard to change management?
In terms of anticipating or once change takes place?
Yeah, so when you've anticipated that there is a change
and you're ready
that needs to take place, yeah, any tips on how you the outworking of that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think communication, massive, designing a really effective communication strategy that is, again, get people on board. It's essential that that takes place early in the process, and that is an important aspect when it comes to planning, to get people involved at a stage where it's not just a tick box at the end of the process. People get to, again, voice their opinions early on, and people are much more ready to run with something if they felt at least they've been heard before being told to do something. That's essential when it comes to implementing change. So again, that communication aspect is probably the biggest tip, I think, when it comes to communication strategy. Really plan that, plan the specific individual, specific positions that need to be involved and at what level. We've got one more at the back there.
Tim, just a question around strategic planning for a campus-structured organisation. Do you have one cohesive plan that covers all of your campuses and everyone works off that, or do you have a grand plan and then each campus has a separate strategic plan for the development of that campus within the broader goal? Do you have a one-pager, or do you have like 2 layers of strategic planning?
Really excellent question. I think it can be done both ways, and we've debated this. At the moment, our strategic planning is on a department basis and would go across our campuses. So the kids' strategic plan will be outworked in each of our campuses, partly because, again, we want to ensure that there's a consistency of approach when it comes to our campuses. When we break down our, and I'll hopefully have enough time to go through this, when we go to our one-year actions and priorities, that will allow the variability between campuses. So at our South Campus, one of the key actions that may need to take place around facilities will be sorting out the theatre. Coral's really upset about her theatre over this because it got bumped, because I'm the Central Campus pastor, she's the South. I stole her resources to put in a chapel service at Central, which I'm pretty stoked about. Coral's not so happy. That's an agile approach that we explained. So I do think it would work both ways, though. I just think you have to maybe choose a way to do it and then allow the flexibility in the very, I guess, micro detail for specific elements for the campuses to be reflected. Are you guys interested in seeing the strategic plan a little bit more? Because it was on the screen, I think. There was a slide that showed our strategic plans. This is something that we've adapted. I don't think there needs to be a rule. You make strategic planning work for yourself. But this is what we use. And it's probably a Chinese whispers version of the Rockefeller process. So over time, this has, again, changed. What I'd ask you to do potentially on the slides is go to my very last slide. I've just listed the key titles that come into our, into our strategic planning. And so I'm going to just rip through these really quickly. Some of them will make a lot of sense to you, some won't. So we've got strategic plans for all of our different departments. For all of our departments, these top three values, the mission, vision, core values, will all be the same. So the mission, again, that defines the why right at the front, why you're doing something. It's the company's heart. Ours is to change and impact generation with the reality of Jesus. It's higher purpose. It answers, you know, basic questions of why we're here, why we're doing what we're doing. The vision for us, again, definitions of mission and vision can change. For us, we're defining vision as the swimming lane, where we're operating, what our focus is. We've got about four bullet points to our overall vision and what we're trying to see outworked across our church. And vision can change over time. At its core, it probably won't, but around the edges, you know, there's some flexibility that would change. And vision's important, creates unity, energy, purpose, enhances leadership and alignment. And below that, it's core values. Now, core values are really going to dictate how you go about doing something. So at Life, our core values, I should ask Coral this because I'm going to probably get them wrong. No, our core values are worship. Worship is our wisdom. Excellence is our essence. Servanthood is our spirit. Time is our testimony. Atmosphere is our activity. Partnership's our privilege. People are our priority. Communication is our commitment. Have I missed any? I've just blended it out. I'm going to do it fast. No, I'm going to leave it. Don't tell Pastor Paul. But those things are going to talk about the how. So in a connect group, we want to see excellence outworked. We want to ensure your connect groups are finishing and starting on time. It's a measuring stick, these core values. You're going to be able to walk into a connect group, a community project, a Sunday service, and recognize that they're lives by our core values. So any organization or church needs to have those outworked. Okay, so those three stay the same right across all our individual one-page strategic plans. Then we get into brand promise. This is the promise to the customer. This is where we start to change. So I think this is really important. We spend a lot of time thinking about, I guess, all these top values here. The brand promise, say for kids, is kids loving church. There's a whole lot of statements you could make about a brand promise for a kids' ministry. They're going to learn memory verses. Kids are going to love worship. They're going to make connection. All that's important. We decided for us, the brand promise needs to, and the promise to parents needs to be, kids are going to love church. And that changes everything below that. Now, we've got in our rocks, opportunity to state absolute must-haves in a program. So within our kids' program, there is, again, biblical teaching. There is worship. There is connection. These are rocks that are immovable within what we're doing. But overarching that, they have to, again, fulfill kids loving church. So we're going to do memory verses in a fun way. We're going to ensure that worship is fun. I want to create a kids' church where they want to be there. They're not just coming to a babysitting service. And it changed us. We implemented that brand promise probably 3-4 years ago. And we'd get parents coming up to us complaining because they're having to change holidays, overseas holidays, because their kids aren't going to want to miss church. Parents are complaining about being dragged out of bed, woken up, knocked on the forehead, it's time to go to church. How awesome is that? Your kids' ministry can actually change your attendance. And I love it. I make no apologies. Send me all the complaints you want. That is awesome. I've had a mother come up to me and say, my kid is going to be in church whether they like it or not. I want them to learn Father Abraham. I want them to get deep theological teaching. But because I've got this one-page strategic plan that has been well thought through. It's endorsed at the highest level. Pastor Paul signs off on these plans with confidence. Me and my team can go, that is awesome, and those things are all important. We've got them as rocks, but we make no apologies. We're going to make this fun for kids. We want kids to be here. And so we're not saying that's right for everyone, but for us, it again ensures alignment. So brand promise for our four people areas of the department is kids loving church. Our brand promise for our youth is a place to belong. And that changes everything. Resource allocation. You know, we do big Friday nights, which are awesome, but that's not our priority. Groups are our priority. We want every one of those teenagers who are going through maybe, you know, a crazy time of life where they can be at school and maybe at homes and places where they're haven't got people to call their own or people that are going to recognize them, appreciate them, that they can come to church and have a place where they belong. And so that changes our whole program, our whole focus. For our young adults ministry, our young adults area, it's a life of purpose. We want to create a area of church that is going to see young adults on fire, not go through that wasted 10, 12 years that I had. We're going to see them on purpose a lot earlier. So again, through groups, that influences what we're the content, what we're trying to communicate, teach, how to inspire them, teams to get involved. And then authentic relationship is our brand promise for our 24 plus, our regions, which again, puts this focus squarely on groups, as we heard Pastor Chris talk about today. And if we've got that stated there, any new idea needs to come back and be measured against those brand promises. So highly important. In the corporate world, it's a brand promise like Volvo is safety. You buy a Volvo, you know, I think their 2020 goal is that no one is going to die in a Volvo. Safety, you get safety. You buy a Volvo, you get safety. Mercedes, it's engineering excellence. None of these are wrong. They're both cars, both four wheels, get you from A to B, but different brand promises. Then we go below that, rocks. So each of our different plans is going to have rocks, those immovable objects. Six, we state key competencies. Again, just as a reminder, what are key competencies that this specific area is going to need when it comes to human resources? Key relationships, again, on this one-page plan, we remind people that are reading it where the key relationships are, what the key interactions, where they need to be investing time. Then we get down to five-year goals, the BHAG. So if any of you have read Good to Great by Jim Collins, I mean, you will be familiar with that concept. I think he talks about a 20-year plan there. We've got a five-year BHAG. When it comes to our church, we're going to have a strong church of 20,000. That, again, is something very specific, measurable, that's put out there, aspirational goal that, again, at the time seems absolutely crazy. Don't have to quite understand how you're going to get there, but just putting it out there. BHAG, big, hairy, audacious goal is how Jim Collins defines what a BHAG is. Sorry about that. You know, it's put a man on the moon. That was a BHAG at the time. Americans had no idea how they were actually going to achieve that, but they kept putting that goal out there. And sure enough, unless you're a conspiracy theorist, they actually got there. So I actually like a good conspiracy. We break that down. You know, that's way out there. We like to then break that down into three-year and one-year goals with key initiatives that are going to, again, support those goals. And that is really getting down to the nuts and bolts of how you are doing things. These one-year targets are specific targets, specific KPIs that we'd be looking to meet within the people departments. KPIs we have is around connection, leadership, team, other stuff, and number of groups. And then we've got this one here is quite important, one-year key actions. That is actually going to define our day-to-day. So that's above business as usual actions that we need to undertake that is going to take us closer, the four or five at maximum things that is going to take us closer to this five-year goal. Got to have priorities. 10 things, that's too many. You're going to just be divided in your attention and your time. Have four or five key actions in here, big chunky things that are going to advance an area of church. So for us, a key action would be next steps, putting in place this, a program that sees new Christians integrate. That's above business as usual. We weren't doing it. It's a project, but we put that in place. That's going to take us closer towards our five-year, our BHAG, and so we'll have a number of those. We place an annual theme. Again, this year was overcome, and that's something that, again, creates culture across what we're doing, helps to create an organisational focus. And then defining on this one page what the critical numbers are that we're measuring. What numbers are we putting out there in front of people that we're going to ensure that everyone knows on a monthly basis where we're at? And for people, this can be quite a hard thing. Actually putting hard numbers, hard targets, KPIs, because it can seem like it's about numbers, but when it comes down to it, all of us care about numbers, whether it's what the number's telling us when we step on the scales, what our bank balance is telling us when we look at that. Hey, we measure what we care about. We just need to come back to our core values. People are our priority. That's stated right at the top, but we're going to measure how we are actually outworking. People are our priority. So this strategic plan is absolutely essential, absolutely essential. It creates alignment across an organisation. It's a measuring stick for any new idea, any new initiative. It has to meet the objectives, what's been stated on the strategic plan. My understanding of aviation, what I've read, is that if a plane is off course by 1 degree, every 60 kilometres it flies, it will fly 1 kilometre off course. So on a trip from here to LA, you'll end up in San Diego. Alignment is essential. I love my maths, and I like to think of it that, you know, with staff and with people, I really believe that people work hard. All my staff work really hard. All the volunteers work really hard. When we work, we output energy. But we do that in a certain direction. It's effectively a vector. And in maths, a vector is a force that's exerted for a specific magnitude and in a specific direction. And when you... I'm going to do some crayon work here. When you add individual elements together... In maths, way back, I think, in maybe year 13, you add them head to tail, and the resulting force will be the sum of those individual totals. Now, if we're off course. We're actually going to end up competing or not being the most effective, and the sum of the individual parts are not going to have their biggest impact. If all of those individual efforts, all those individual forces are being put in the same direction with no misalignment, I'd need an A3 or a bigger piece of paper to demonstrate the resulting output. Alignment is essential to effectiveness, and that's why, you know, when we communicate to team, to leaders getting on board, we really understand our swimming lane at life. That's been set very clearly at the top there by Pastor Paul, Pastor Marie. We want leaders on board with that. They may have a different focus, a different priority. Absolutely fine. That's cool. But that's not who we are. This is what we are called to do, us as a church. This is how we are outworking the Great Commission. We want you to get on board with that. There's plenty of opportunity and scope within that to add your skills, gifts, efforts. But this is where we're going, and we're going to put all effort to outworking that. And I think it's so important for any organisation, any church. I think we're pretty much finished, are we, Coral? Just a minute or two?
Sure.
One question and then... I don't think any church should have enough resources to match the vision that their senior pastor, their senior leadership should have. I think if the funds that are available are outstripping the vision, I think there's an issue. So again, it's about being creative. You lack the funds? You're either saying you should lack the funds. You should lack the funds for the vision that is out there. And then it's about thinking strategically and, again, being smart with what you've got that's going to take you to where you go. You just choose the most efficient use of resource based on this measuring stick that is going to take you towards that goal, and work it out. We've got a building project which... $45 million at the moment, and again, that is not sitting in the bank at the moment. We've got a very clear strategy of how we're going to achieve that and how we're going about that. We're not just hoping. We are praying, but we've got a strategy behind how we're going to see that become a reality. Hey, guys, can you just put your hand up if you've got one thing? Loaded question, but it's going to make me enable me to sleep better tonight. Thanks heaps. Happy to chat for the rest of the conference if you've got any questions.